From a dusty raised lot on Apache, this is Main Street Mesa. Welcome to Main Street Mesa, where we discuss issues around building a more human, people-centered community in Mesa and other communities like it.
I'm Ryan Wozniak.
And I'm David Crummy.
Today, we are happy to have an interview with Lava Sunder, the cul-de-sac Tempe general manager, and it's pretty new, human-scale development that's coming to Tempe. And David, you might know a little bit about this. Why?
Because I literally work across the street from the lot that is currently raised for this development. I was supposed to be in the interview, but work got in the way. So you took it and did a wonderful job.
Bring it home, man.
Yeah, the project is right on Apache and River. What's the light rail station? Smith Martin, yeah, and River.
The very northwest corner of the project is right at the mid-mile between the 101 and McClintock, if you're on Apache Boulevard. So pretty cool site, it's along the neighborhoods, kind of seeing some new developments. David's office is in one of those. So some new life being breathed into the area. All of it wouldn't be possible without the light rail.
Yeah. Well, and the exciting thing about this project is that it is car-free, or mostly car-free.
Mostly car-free, at least for the residential pieces, right? So, and we get into that into the episode. And one thing that we didn't touch on the episode that folks might want to think about coming in is that there's a lease agreement that happens between residents and the development, if you're wondering as to how that actually comes about. So if you're going to sign a lease into a car-free community, sign the dotted line and say you're not bringing in a car on site or anywhere near the site, really. And that's where the city of Tempe kind of stepped into to create that development agreement that not only tells residents that they can't park on their own property or on site of cul-de-sac, but not anywhere like something 300, 400, 500 feet, even close to the site, something like that.
Yeah. The other exciting things about the project is that this is not necessarily the most pedestrian oriented part of Tempe. Mm-hmm. Tempe has done a lot of heavy lifting for bike and ped infrastructure, but this neighborhood or this spot of the neighborhood is somewhat isolated. And so that's exciting to see this type of innovative project. This type of project where they're trying something like not having cars, or at least requiring the residents not to have cars nearby, basically right almost on the Mesa border of Tempe. It's only a little bit further, two light rail stations further. And the other cool thing is that the architect of record is Opticos Studios, who did Mesa's form-based code.
Yeah, so for the future residents there, if they wanted to, say, have pizza in the Middle Avenue scene, they are looking at a 3.1-mile bike ride. But for Superior scene, if they want to have a 3.8-mile ride for Mike's Pizza in downtown Mesa, it's only a little farther.
And probably
better pizza, though.
Well, way better pizza. And, you know, like most of the closest shopping is in Mesa. So one of the things that we are going to have to think of as this project is constructed, is underway, is how do we connect with all these hundreds and hundreds of residents and invite them to do their shopping in Mesa, since we are addicted to the heroin that is sales tax.
Yay. So David, we talked a little bit in the episode about fiscal tax. So I want you to take a listen to that, and I want your thoughts after the episode.
All right. That sounds great. I can't wait to hear it.
All right.
So without further ado, here is Ryan and Lava Sunder discussing Cul-de-sac Tempe.
All right. To fill us in on the finer points of today's conversation is Lava Sunder. Lava, who
are you? Hi, guys.
So glad to have you. So who are you, and what is this crazy company that you work for, and what makes your mission unique?
Yeah. So my name is Lava. I'm the general manager of Cul-de-sac Tempe. I work for Cul-de-sac, and we're the world's first post-car real estate developer, and we're building car-free communities from scratch. And I think what makes our mission unique, I mean, you can kind of hear it in what we're doing, but we're building communities from the ground up that have zero residential parking, and where our residents get around with bikes and light rail and scooters, and it's the first of its kind.
Well, I can tell you that there's been conversations in this podcast in many a times about the impacts of cars in our communities. So it should be no shock to folks as to what this means. But when it comes to building a car-free community, you just find some land, right? And you just start building. Is that generally how it goes?
Definitely not. I wish it was that easy. But, I think the biggest thing, and actually this just speaks to how innovative Tempe is, the biggest thing when you're developing, right, is how do you park the development? I think you obviously know this. This is the first question that developers ask. This oftentimes is the element that influences the fundamental financial underwriting of the project. So for us, the first step we needed to do was find a city that was okay with completely waiving the residential parking requirement. And that city, of course, was Tempe. So a lot of people might not know this, but the first really big accomplishment we did as a company was passing a development agreement with the city of Tempe that allowed us to waive residential parking requirements. And this is actually the first time in the US that a developer and a city have worked together to do something like that.
And that's pretty substantial savings to the development, I imagine. And just for context, so we're talking about Tempe, we're talking about along the light rail, but where exactly along the light rail is this community concept landing?
Yeah, so it's in Tempe, it's on Apache, it's east of McClintock and west of the 101, and it's right on the Smith Martin Apache Boulevard light rail station. So my favorite nearest landmark is the Daba, which is my favorite Indian restaurant in Tempe, and it's just across the street and a little bit east of the Daba.
And that's pretty cool. So this site, what's it evolving from?
Yeah, so, this site, it's a 17-acre assemblage. It took many years to assemble. It's more than 40 parcels. And, it was just empty buildings. And the plans were actually originally to make a multifamily development with a lot of parking. But those plans fell through. And so, we're really happy to be able to take this piece of land and evolve it into what Cul-de-sac Tempe will be.
Okay. So you said that your first piece of this was to get that development agreement in place so that you know that the city of Tempe was at the table with you guys as to trying to achieve this car-free vision for a community. Now, what's that timeline? Where does that timeline start?
Yeah, so we got entitlements in about a year. So I believe we kind of submitted for entitlements at the beginning of last year. And we kind of finalized our entitlements process at the end of last year, and our community opens next year. It's one of the things that makes developing in Tempe, and I should say Arizona more broadly, really attractive. It's just, you know, it's easier for us and quicker for us to get entitlements compared to, say, California. So we've been really happy with how forward thinking and really how fast moving the city of Tempe has been. You know, one kind of anecdote here is like, when you have a car-free 17-acre community, that also means that you don't have any internal roads. But there's you know, apartments all over the development. And so we had to figure out how to get fire trucks in to the community without any roads. So we've actually designed the community in such a way that the walking lanes are 26 feet wide so that they can actually be converted to a fire lane if, you know, heaven forbid, there's a reason for a fire truck to get on the site. And it was really that type of creativity that Tempe was great at, and working with staff to try to figure out these creative solutions to development.
Yeah. So now we're getting into the details as to how the site's kind of laid out. And so you talked about the need for accommodating the fire trucks into the community. And obviously there's going to be a fair amount of variety on the site, right? So I've done my homework. I've looked into the development. It's all, you know, like the good thing about like the public sector is they try to be as transparent as possible. So all these approvals that you're talking about are of course found on Tempe's website. And so digging through those, I was able to find, you know, that you guys have brought along a 5-phase build out plan that ultimately is striving towards like a planned area development. And that's planner talk for a custom land zoning where you have this mix of uses and maybe you need some variances and things that you can just kind of bake in into the code of what's going to end up shaping the community. And I see that, you know, you guys have some amazing consultants on board that are giving you some beautiful 3-story tall buildings, a lot of Spanish flavor there with some sort of modern contemporary twists and things of that nature. How did that, tell me a little bit more about like how that came together. Like did the development agreement come together? And then you guys got the consultants on board and started visioning about the site?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to chat about that. I mean, so one of the key partners for us has been Opticos Design. They're an architecture firm based in Berkeley. And their founding principal, Dan Perolik, he actually popularized the term missing middle architecture, which I'm sure you are familiar with, but I'll kind of explain for listeners. And it's kind of this idea that in the U.S. we have 2 types of development. So we have, you know, your very large multifamily towers, and then you have your single family homes, but we've stopped building the middle. So this is the missing middle that's like duplexes, triplexes, you know, garden style apartments. And this is really the type of architecture that creates human scale walkable neighborhoods. So we really knew we wanted to bring on a partner that was familiar with creating this type of architecture. And they were really a huge part in envisioning what the residential build type looks like. So what you're describing as the sort of almost like European style architecture, what we call it internally Desert Mykonos, which I obviously love. And it really kind of, you know, it makes you think about Europe and how human scale and walkable those communities are. We also have a lot of plazas in the community. So we have a few main plazas, and these are really directly influenced by some Italian plazas. Dan actually spent some time with his family living in Italy and is very much inspired by the built environment there. So they were really key in helping us understand how to build the community. But I should also say that we also had a huge number of local partners that understood the local context quite well. You know, one example of this is Chris Floor of Floor Associates. They're a landscape architect. She's just an absolutely, you know, kick-ass landscape architect. She's done work with Phoenix Botanical Gardens, and combining, you know, Dan's sort of vision with her understanding of the Arizona environment and how do you really localize this design has been really amazing. I'm sure we'll talk about this later, but one of the cool things about Cul-de-sac Tempe is when you get rid of cars and parking, you actually just make room for so much more space. So 55% of the site is open space. I mean, you know, 55% of the site doesn't have buildings, but all of that space needs to have landscaping on it. So Chris has been hard at work. And the type of landscaping environment that we'll have at Cul-de-sac is really, really special.
Yeah, there's a lot of obviously a lot of canvas for her to work with there as a landscape architect. So that's amazing.
Yeah.
So there is. Yeah. So I want to kind of circle back. So now that you're talking about the visioning of the site, and you have the architect and the landscape architect there to help make sure everything gel, and you're taking advantage of all those opportunities that have opened up with the lack of parking or reductions in parking. Now, how does that get worked out with the neighbors? Because obviously a key aspect of any sort of planning process is that you want to involve the neighbors and notice the neighbors, have that neighborhood meeting, talk out through concerns. So you have the 17 acres just saying, hey, we're going to be bringing lots of homes and lots of commercial space into the 17 acres, brand new build out community from the ground up. Isn't it great? Like, is that how does that conversation go within that neighborhood meeting?
Yeah, I mean, so we're located in the Escalante neighborhood in Tempe. The neighbors have been really welcoming, and we have really enjoyed getting to know them. So the former chair of the neighborhood association, Christina Pucci, she's actually even been involved in some of our discussions about what the community will look like. I actually kind of have a funny story about how different cul-de-sac is than a typical developer, because, you know, we wanted to get to know the neighborhood a little bit better. So we decided to go to the neighborhood block party that was costume only. And so, you know, I was running around.
All right. Well, wait, yeah, what were you dressed as?
Well, it was just so funny because I was running around between meetings at the city. You know, I had like, all I had was my blazer and stuff. And so I said, oh my gosh, shit, I need to get a costume. And so my friend had a pajama onesie, like a Build-A-Bear pajama onesie. So I was like, okay, whatever. So I put on this pajama onesie and I go to the neighborhood block party, and I'm like, well, I have to meet these people. And I mean, it's just like, what? I would love if you could tell me another local developer that shows up to the neighborhood block party in a Build-A-Bear pajama onesie, but it was so fun. I mean, it was such a great opportunity to meet the community.
That's how you get neighborhood buy-in. Yeah. You show up in costume right. And you become part of the people. That's from day one. All right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean,
can we call you Lava Bear from this far, so far in the, for the rest of the conversation?
I think we'll see how the rest of this conversation goes. You have to earn the right to call me Lava Bear, but we'll see.
All right. Oh, that's great. Oh, I've been doing this for a long time, and I've not seen a developer tell me in like their meeting notes that showed up to a meeting in bear onesie. But that would be great minutes to recap the neighborhood meeting.
Right.
That's great. So, all right. So you're getting some cred in the neighborhood. Typically, whenever something new comes out, and so this is novelty to cul-de-sac Tempe, that you're doing away with all these residential parking. So tell me what the neighbors think about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, cul-de-sac Tempe is a neighborhood for everyone in the area. So we'll talk about this a bit more later, but cul-de-sac Tempe has twice as much retail than a typical development because we don't have residential parking. So at cul-de-sac Tempe, we're going to have a restaurant, a grocery store, a coffee shop, a co-working space, a food truck park. That's all very much open to the community. So I think people really are just thrilled about that. I mean, you know, we're creating these amenities for our residents and for the community, and being able to have access to that as well as, you know, to the park and to the pool is really something that I think the whole community is looking forward to.
That's amazing. I mean, you would typically see development at this caliber and you know, investing this much into their private land that they sort of take an outsider's keep out approach, in gating and surrounding the community with walls and creating their own internal, you know, celebrated space that's just like, you know, that's ours and everybody else can get their own. I imagine that wins favor with your neighbors.
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say it's like, it's almost like wins favor makes it sound like it's a decision we made in response to something. It's like, that is just such a fundamental part of our ethos and our community building. We would never you know, think to do it otherwise. So it's, I think, I just think that the whole community is very excited for Tempe.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that framing and explaining how that is not just a trade-off. It is something core to your ethos. So that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, now I think that we're ready to get into the details, right? So we talked about that where you're landing, that you're bringing a car free community, at least for the residential side, that you have all these amenities commercially and sort of helping stitch a destination together for the entire community with a lot of amenities, I guess, is what that ends up becoming. When you talk about all these things coming together and 636 apartment homes, some live work, over 3,000 or nearly 30,000 square feet of office and retail space, over 11,000 square feet of restaurant, cafe, and bar space, nearly 8,000 square feet of a gym and shared use spaces, and all these places where the community is invited into. These are some big numbers that people can kind of lose sight of, but you're talking about something that kind of breaks apart into individual pieces that are very much neighborhood scale and create a complete community, which is something that, oddly enough, has sort of been a forgotten aspect, largely like you were saying that Dan Paralek has brought us the missing middle housing concept. This is another missing element of a lot of new neighborhood build outs, is that they're sort of incomplete. They're too monolithic. They don't lend to this complementary complete aspect. So without all that parking, I guess you provide a lot more room and space for all these types of things, right?
Yeah, I think that's really the key element. Not only do you provide more room, but you don't need to, as a developer, we don't need to spend, quite an expensive amount on a parking garage or on-site parking. And so we're able to basically convert that into all of these amenities. And so when we think about cul-de-sac, it's really life at your front door. And so for us, walkability is a neighborhood scale feature. You can't just build, a walkable building in the middle of a city. You really actually need to build this neighborhood from the ground up around walkability. So I liked the point that you made about kind of how, these are numbers, but what does this actually look like for a resident? I mean, if I'm a resident, I'm living at cul-de-sac, like I said, I have life at my front door. So I have a grocery store on site. I have a restaurant on site. I have a co-working space on site if I choose to use it. And I have a coffee shop and a bike repair shop. I also have a number of live work, units that are likely going to become smaller retail areas. We have a wait list of folks looking to move into cul-de-sac. And a large number of these folks are looking to operate a live work unit with a lot of really cool units. We also have a very big component of the community around mobility, of course. So there's an on-site light rail stop, there's on-site car share, there are integrated rideshare pickup spots around the community, as well as on-site scooters. And so both of these elements really allow you to access life at cul-de-sac easily, as well as life outside cul-de-sac and in the Tempe area as well. This isn't something where we're expecting residents to never leave the community, but we're making it easier to live car free by offering you some set of amenities
within the community itself. Yeah, not only do you gain all the space, you say that there's a huge monetary gain for the how the developments will actually pencil in the end. Tell me what that means for the tenants of these spaces. How does this availability of space get passed on as a benefit to the residents and the future tenants?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the ways is like I said, the stat earlier about 55% of the community is open space, but that looks like something really interesting if I'm a resident. So, I grew up in Houston, which is a very car dependent city as well. When I opened my front door where I grew up, I saw a driveway, I saw a road, and I didn't really see much else, right? There wasn't really a lot of, courtyard or open space. If you're a resident at cul-de-sac and you open your door, it's literally like you're living in a park. You open your door, you see a courtyard that has a barbecue or a fire pit or some trees, you know, or a water feature. And you can walk around the entire community without ever having to see asphalt or a car. And that experience is something that is so incredible as a person, but is really undersupplied in the US. So that's really what we're able to create. It's not just the provision of these amenities. It's actually just the provision of a lifestyle that is cool. Is like living in a park.
And the proximity that you have to the light rail station and the fact that you're making space for now the ride shares and the bikes and the e-scooters and the charging stations and everything seems to still offer access outside of the neighborhood, and also invites not just the adjacent neighbors, but anybody who's coming along the light rail will have access to the development, which are all these new amenities, right?
Yep, exactly. And there'll be a, you know, dedicated crosswalk from the light rail stop to the community. So it's going to be as easy.
I touched base with a contact that I have at Tempe, and they tell me that you're going to be altering the access between the site and the light rail station.
Yeah, we are. So right now you have to kind of walk down the street just a bit and cross the street, but we're making just a small little crosswalk. So you'll just have to.
That's a wonderful enhancement. That's sometimes you hear this thing thrown out about public private partnerships, and just getting sort of those offsite improvements that aren't immediate to the site, but enhance the site and enhance the public realm, the assets that the residents of Tempe own, and the Valley Metro operators that are looking at the operations of their site and everything. So I think that that's an incredible win-win. So
totally.
Phase one out of a 5-phase development, we're talking about a significant number of apartment complexes, and you do most of your vehicle parking that you are going to have on site, like pretty much in phase one, just to serve the commercial aspects, right? I see a little over 100 vehicle parking spaces. There's some car share spaces. There's some delivery spaces. There's some metered parking for the Donald Troop fans and the, you know, high cost of free parking aspect. You know, we got 13 on-street parking spaces on Apache, and then the whopping. So you had just a little over 100 vehicle parking spaces, and now a whopping 189 bicycle spaces. That's pretty incredible.
And that's just in phase one. Throughout the entire community, we'll have over 600 bike parking
spaces. It's just mind-boggling. It's great.
I love that you can appreciate it, because I mean, I was talking to a developer the other day who's kind of familiar with the Apache area, and he was saying that a lot of the apartment complexes nearby don't have any bike parking spaces. And so, I mean, it really is just changing the game when you go from 0 to 600 dedicated bike spaces, including we're going to have some, you know, inspired by kind of the Netherlands. We'll have these bike ports that are covered and protected. So yeah, we're really excited to innovate what bike parking looks like in the area.
And then, so I also saw like in the phasing plan that it's basically maybe a few more vehicle parking spaces and phases in like the last phase, like phase four or phase five, something like that. But basically it's the community's never planned to have many more than this initial 107 parking spaces.
Yeah, that's right. And like you said, those parking spaces are for commercial and resident guests.
So that was the ticket. Like, there was that development agreement early on that gave you guys the confidence to pursue this and spend the creative energy and the time and the money to pursue this vision. Right. So, and the differential here with the 600 plus residential units that are coming into the complex, the tens of thousands of square feet of retail and commercial space, this by code would have easily exceeded 1200 parking spaces, and the total planned 152. So that is a significant difference. That's over 1100 parking spaces that you're saved monetarily and spatially for the site. The opportunity costs of parking, hogging all that space, now enjoyable things. So those numbers are almost unimaginable to think about the sea of parking that is 1100 parking spaces. But I mean, it's going to, the whole neighborhood just stitches together, right? There's not there's not that pressure that's pushing things apart, right? There's this history in our country where we have these zoning codes that are trying to separate uses. And then if it wasn't the separation of the uses, it was the sea of asphalt that pushed things apart. And you guys are given this ability to pull things together.
Yeah. And actually, even just to make your point further about the saving the parking spots, none of our residents will get around with private car. So it's not actually just saving the parking in our community. And that's really incredible. You know, a lot of studies have found that there's about, 3 to 4 parking spots per car, because you don't just park at home, right? You park at work, you park at your grocery store, you park at, your gym. And so we're beginning to sort of create this system where you're actually not just getting rid of the residential parking. Hopefully you're beginning to shift the sort of parking and built environment beyond just the residential area, and allow businesses outside of cul-de-sac to build with lower parking requirements.
And you've talked about how this, how you've also tried to meet the mobility needs of the residents through these other means. So I really don't see that people are really losing out. But at the same time, this community is probably not for everybody, and that's probably an okay thing too. Like, who is your target audience here?
Yeah, we don't really have a target audience. I would actually say that the response for cul-de-sac has been from people all across the U.S. and from all walks of life. So one of the coolest things about the idea of cul-de-sac Tempe is that it appeals to people outside of just Arizona. So we have this wait list of founding residents, and over 60% of them are coming from outside Arizona, including places like New York, San Francisco, Austin. And these are really people that are planning on moving to Tempe just because they want to live in a car-free, walkable neighborhood, which is really awesome. We have folks that are young professionals. They work in downtown Tempe, plan on commuting via bike or light rail. We also have families. We also have empty nesters and retirees who currently have a big house and are looking to downsize, and also are looking at a place that's a little bit more amenitized than a typical apartment complex. So we're actually really seeing the appeal of the community across the board, which is one of the things, honestly, that I've been most happy with in the process of really creating cul-de-sac Tempe.
Awesome. And also I want to speak now to sort of a specific audience that might tune in here. And that's really the planners who have long strived to understand or bring together the foundational principles of land use planning and transportation planning. And really the best intersection there is parking, right? Parking regulation has a way of unlocking potential on the transportation side, as well as now everything that you've kind of spoken to on the land use side. And some people might look at the development agreement that you got from Tempe as sort of like such a big give to the development. But I, as somebody who does this for a municipality, I want to help highlight the fact that this development is going to be impacting the roads, the 101, the immediate Apache Boulevard, the parking required at ASU, which is, publicly funded operation, like all these, all the tax dollars that go towards providing these inefficient roads with these big tax dollar price tags to them, and that liability that it creates. You guys have just given Tempe a taxable, productive development with so much less of that tax liability attached to it. So with that in mind, like how else does this complement Tempe's benefits? They have like this concept of an environmentally conscious 20-minute city goal. Like, how has that shaped the conversations or opened up the doors for you guys?
Sure. I mean, I think that this project is very much in line with what Tempe is envisioning of the city. So One thing is, of course, you mentioned the 20-minute city goal. So we think, we talk about cul-de-sac internally and with our residents as a 5-minute city. So you can walk end-to-end cul-de-sac in about 5 minutes. And so in that 5-minute trip, you have, like I said, all of these amenities. And then if you take into consideration, you know, it's about a 10-minute light rail ride down to downtown Tempe, where a number of our residents will work, then you have really already this 15-minute city, which is obviously helping Tempe achieve that goal. I would say the second place where it's what's helping Tempe's goals is Vision Zero. So obviously getting more people, getting more people to sort of live and commute without the car is also going to hopefully help encourage more infrastructure and investment in bike infrastructure. So we're planning on really working with the city to get some more dedicated bike lanes. And we think that by drawing more bikers into the area, that will sort of create demand for this infrastructure, bring more infrastructure in, and then that creates this kind of flywheel. Because when you have better bike lanes, you get more bikers and so on and so forth. So I think that will be a huge thing as well.
No, I think that's that point is well taken with the supply side demand out of what, if you supply the bikers, then there's demand for the infrastructure. So that makes a lot of sense. But I think we'd also be a little bit remiss. I don't want to miss the one downside of this site location is that it's surrounded by a fair amount of sort of hubs of sort of distribution centers. And then you have the railroad tracks to the south. So I think that maybe the opportunities for traveling south from the site will be sort of maybe a bit of a hindrance for bicycle commuters long-term. But to your point, the gravitation of people to ASU, the gravitation to people, jobs along the river, the waterfront. And also I wouldn't be a good Mesa resident if I didn't highlight that this was also only 4 light rail stops away from downtown Mesa, or even 5 stops from City Hall. So there's also opportunity for those employment centers and entertainment centers to be complemented by future residents of cul-de-sac.
So. Totally. And I should say, I mean, I actually visited downtown Mesa. So I only moved to Tempe in March. And so I visited downtown Mesa for the first time a few months ago. And I got there, I have an e-bike, and I'd love to talk more about e-bikes because we're huge fans on the team. But it's such a quick e-bike ride down Apache. It takes 15 minutes. And I was so surprised by how cool downtown Mesa is. I mean, I shouldn't say surprised, I should have expected it, but I really loved it. And I found myself going back all the time to downtown Mesa because it's so close to our site. And I spent a lot of time at our site. So I'm a big fan of downtown Mesa and Mesa, and I love how close it is to cul-de-sac Tempe.
Yeah. And yeah, I know that Mesa doesn't get the notoriety that the Mill Avenues does. And, you know, for a long time, you'd hear city council or planning zoning commissions saying, you know, like, sort of more like the Mill Avenue. What's the magic of the Mill Avenue? You know, like, there's just be talking about constantly being compared to that, or the constant comparison to even downtown Gilbert, which Mesa's flair is completely different than that of Mill Avenue and that of downtown Gilbert. And I just love to see how it's coming into its own and sort of the local flavors and the authentic restaurants that are popping up in downtown Mesa. I'm all for the light rail commuters coming in and helping populate the bars that are popping up and the restaurants that are so unique and so cool to downtown Mesa.
Oh, totally. And I mean, tacos, I don't know, have you been to Tacos Chivas in downtown Mesa? Oh,
so good.
Isn't it so, I mean, their barbacoa tacos should be illegal. They're so good. Yeah, I find myself biking to them a lot. And there's a coffee shop right next door. I'm forgetting the name, but those two spots are my go-to.
The Nile. Yeah.
The Nile. So, yeah.
We got some good spots. No doubt. And so, Yeah, I want to give you a chance to talk about how e-bikes complement this. This is all new, right? Like the concept of this new community, new neighborhood being built up to be this newer concept of a car-free neighborhood, and this new concept of this new mobility option of e-bikes. How do those movements complement one another?
Yeah, I mean, I'll speak kind of both from personal experience and at a bit of a macro level. I mean, so personally, you know, I was born and raised in Houston, and I grew up with the very anti-cul-de-sac ethos. I got a car the day I turned 16. You know, I got my driver's license that day as well. I drove everywhere. But I last year sold my car, and I have exclusively gotten around via e-bike, and now in Tempe exclusively get around via e-bike. And I can honestly say it's like the easiest and most sort of affordable transportation I've ever had in my life. And I think Arizona is particularly, and the Tempe area is particularly well placed for e-bikes, because there's actually quite a bit of Tempe that's bikeable. And so I found that I've been able to hop on the Scottsdale Greenbelt, get up to Scottsdale, you know, go to Mesa, go to even Phoenix, just on taking the e-bike and the light rail. And I think that it's really going to revolutionize the way that we think about biking. And so something someone said to me that I really liked is that e-bikes are helping Americans specifically understand that biking isn't just for, you know, recreational activity, but can actually be for commuting. There really are vehicles that we should think about just as we think about cars and as we think about trucks, because they are very much used for, you know, a lot of people's daily commute. And so one of my favorite kind of e-bike stories is we have someone on our team named Vanessa. She was on the founding team of Cul-de-sac, and she has just sold her car for a Rad Wagon, which is an electric cargo bike. She has four kids. She actually just gave birth to her fourth kid, and she was 9 months pregnant taking around two of her kids on this e-bike. I mean, it's like, it's so crazy what it unlocks you to be able to do. And you think about kind of equity and like all types of people can use an e-bike. And, you know, I really think it's going to make biking more accessible to a wider number of people, especially in Tempe heat. It's really awesome.
Yeah. So you said that you grew up with an anti-cul-de-sac ethos, which I guess just opens up the opportunity for me to phrase a question that's probably not original to you, but why is the company called Cul-de-sac?
Yeah. You know, I think it was just like a funny kind of play on words.
A little tongue in cheek,
obviously. Everyone knows what a cul-de-sac is. And so I think it's just sort of turning that word on its head. The funny thing about cul-de-sac is no one on our team speaks French, at least that I know of. And so we sometimes will get little jabs from people from French Twitter, I guess, kind of saying, I mean, that's not how you say the word. And we're like, I mean, it's the name of our company. Anyway, yeah, it's just a little tongue in cheek.
It's the way the Americans say that word.
Yeah. I feel bad. I feel bad, actually. I shouldn't. Yeah.
Well, the e-bikes thing, I would be remiss. The downtown Mesa has a great little hub of a community called HeatSync. And they, while they have a lot of sort of techie groups and techie interests around computing and software engineering and things that are emerging in sort of the do-it-yourselfer computer world, whether it be printing or 3D printing or sort of simple DIY automation for how you can use a computer to cut out a fancy shape out of a piece of wood. They also are great e-bike fans there, and you can service your own e-bike there at HeatSync. And so just how that technology comes together is pretty amazing.
I should definitely let the team know.
Yeah. definitely am bringing it, you know, keep on more reasons to come to Mesa.
Yeah. And I have to shout out our CEO and co-founder, Ryan Johnson. He's the single biggest e-bike fan on the planet. You guys should, you know, if listeners are interested in e-bikes, just follow him on Twitter. But I think he now owns 20 e-bikes. Like it's some insane number, but I should totally have him check out HeatSync.
Yeah, so I follow Ryan on Twitter, and I have to say that you don't really expect somebody to own that many e-bikes or have that with the variety of bikes that he has. But he can tell you which ones the easiest ones to put together and everything. So
yeah, exactly.
Definitely a good guy to follow if you're just getting interested in e-bikes and you want to learn from the pro, because he's the one that would know. Sort of an unbiased opinion on the e-bike thing too. Like, it doesn't seem like he has any sort of stake
in, no, in he's any, just trying it company. Out
he's just yeah. he's just going across the whole field. All right, well, there's so much groundbreaking that's happening you know, metaphorically with this project, but when is it slated to actually break ground physically?
Yeah, we broke ground last year, but we did have a bit of a construction delay because of COVID. And so we're planning on opening up towards the end of next year.
All right. So something to keep our eye on as we pass the site. We'll start seeing some more activity soon. The recovery of COVID and everything, hopefully.
We had our first on-site event yesterday, last night. And I feel like I'm going to give a little spoiler, but I think that this podcast will come out after we announce this. We did an aerial art piece with 2,300 pounds of cornstarch, and we spelled We Heart Bikes on the site in cornstarch.
Nice. Cornstarch.
And actually, you can see it from when you're flying into Sky Harbor. So I had a friend text me, I think I saw the cul-de-sac site. Does it say We Heart Bikes? I said, you know what? It in fact, it does.
Did you guys happen to time that with like when the Google satellite is passing over to take over the area? Like, there's all these people that are doing that.
Smart. No, that would have been smart. No, but right. I don't know. Maybe we just got lucky. I have to check Google Maps now.
Keep our fingers crossed. Well, You spoke a little bit about how the e-bike thing is unlocking equity. Is there anything more that you would like to add as to how this project is not only a win for the environment, not only a win for those who are seeking a different lifestyle and connecting people to the obviously the bustling job boom that the area is having in Tempe and in Mesa along, you know, just a short trip north of the site. And you talk about having this ethos that is about just being connected to the neighborhood and serving folks. I want to leave on the note of equity, if you will. Do you have anything more to talk about how this project is serving the cause of equity in Tempe?
Sure. I mean, we think beyond just Tempe, at Cul-de-sac, we believe that housing and transportation inequality is a very big problem in the U.S. 52% of people in the U.S. want to live in a walkable neighborhood, but actually only 8% do. And this pretty crazy supply-demand mismatch means that walkable neighborhoods are typically prohibitively expensive for most Americans. So what we're trying to do is create a new option for people that want to live in a walkable neighborhood and doing it in a way that is just more accessible to the average American. We think that this type of lifestyle should not just be reserved to, you know, folks that live in West Village in Manhattan, but should really be available all across the U.S.
All right. So I guess you got more work ahead of you then if you're going to be branching out across the U.S. Is that the idea?
Yeah. So Cul-de-sac Tempe is definitely just our first project. We're working on our next projects, and they will be, 5 to 10,000 people. And the plan is to eventually build the first car-free city in the U.S.
Whoa. Well, I hope that, you know, that folks take a lesson from what you guys lead here, because what you guys are doing deserves to be replicable. Because like you said, this is something with a demand-supply mismatch, and that's making projects like it sort of prohibitively expensive for a lot of folks who are interested in this type of lifestyle. And anything left to add for folks who might be coming away from this podcast thinking that that sounds cute and all, but just don't know if it's going to be something that changes the world.
You know, what I would say is, I encourage you to try to see it for yourself. So we're cul-de-sac, and if you go to our website, you can sign up for a virtual tour. Once you get a sense of what the community will look like, we've had a lot of people say, wow, I can't wait to live in a community like this, or I would love to get the chance to live in a community like this. We're the first car-free community built from scratch in the US. We're coming right to Tempe. You know, you can email me directly to get a tour or go on our website, but you know, I just encourage you to give it a chance, because I really do think that this is going to be the future of development in the US.
That's awesome. And there's no reason why it can't be replicated with, you know, the hardworking folks at Tempe laying the groundwork, being open-minded, saying, hey, let's put together a development agreement. And you guys have created a nice little template that people can borrow from. So kudos to you. And I invite more people to be as brave as you in this pursuit of trying to make for a more accessible, environmentally conscious, safer, healthier world. So kudos to you. I can't say enough good things about the warm fuzzies that the project gives me. So thank you so much for your time. You said that people can email you. Is there any maybe Twitter handles or emails that you'd like to leave folks?
Yeah. And I love that you're getting warm fuzzies. I'm getting warm fuzzies as well. So my email is lavanya@cul-de-sac. It's LAVANYA. And then on Twitter, I'm @LavanyaSunder. And I encourage you to follow cul-de-sac as well. And that's just @cul-de-sac, CULDESAC.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Lava. Thank you for the time. I'm sure that folks are going to get excited, especially when they drive by and they see this project come into fruition. So thank you so much for sharing what you have with us today. And we'll catch you maybe for an update.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me as well.
Well done, Ryan. I don't know how I could have helped. I think I only would have gotten in the way. Excellent work.
No way, David. We would have loved to have you in part of the conversation, but you know, we made it work without you. We did our best. We stayed on track.
Oh, I appreciate it. It's a fascinating conversation. It's a fascinating project.
It is, but since you weren't available for the original conversation, now's your chance to weigh in since you've had a chance to listen.
Well, now then she's not here to answer all my additional questions. I can just like rail against this project and go just tear it down.
Something tells me that you're not going to just tear it down, David. No. I think somewhere in your heart of hearts, you actually love the idea of this project.
It's really exciting. A group taking a stab at trying to do traditional neighborhood development in a market and finance and planning structure that screams against doing anything like that. And yes. And that's really exciting. So I could probably see a couple silver linings here.
Couple silver linings.
Indeed. I'm actually really excited about this. Even as an experiment, I think that it can push the boundaries a lot, especially here in the Valley. I love the concept of the desert Mykonos, the concept of having the pool and the amenities available to the neighborhood. Like yeah. That blew my mind.
It was that hit. Home for me when she talked about the ethos of not wanting to just cage in all that private property, 17 acres of mine, you stay out, neighbors. Shame on you for trying to enter my fiefdom.
Yeah, looking at the site plan, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about is like, you know, there are these little pods and they're walled garden pods of homes, but the entire site itself is so open and permeable. And yeah. Permeable meaning welcoming. You can get through things. You can walk from one side of the site to the other.
it doesn't become a complete barrier to people who are trying to get to the site without the luxury of 45 mile per hour travel.
Yeah. Well, and the idea that even though it's, you know, mostly residential, that you could go wandering in the street like you would in a beautiful town in another country where we have beautiful towns. The idea of, I was thinking about how do people with mobility disabilities get around in here, and how much of an opportunity that is, you know, assuming it's designed well, and we have a lot of standards that require good design. You don't have cars coming out of random places. You can get around. If you can get around on an e-scooter, you can get around on a mobility scooter.
Yeah. One thing I think of, trying to envision what the experience is going to be like on the site is going to be very quiet without the rumbling traffic.
Yeah.
Cutting through the site, especially deep into the site, right? So as you get your way away from Apache Boulevard, you'll probably just hear the light ding of the light rail.
Yeah. I mean, Apache's not crazy busy to begin with. It will be quiet. Mm-hmm. It's just a really fascinating experiment. We know it's going to work. And the biggest questions that I have is, how do we benefit and push the boundaries on getting projects like this, one, to happen more, and two, to connect better? You know, my office is right literally across the street from this site. And if
across two streets,
catty corner. And it is hard to get there if you're not comfortable riding your bike on Main Street. And Main Street, even though it's got a nice bike lane, is not, it's 40 miles an hour in Mesa. So I was just thinking, I know I really need to experience e-bikes a little bit more. And mm-hmm. I think it would be a great e-bike ride, but I don't know how comfortable I would be. And I don't know how comfortable a lot of other people would be on taking Main Street, especially when it goes up to 40 miles an hour in Mesa.
That's so true.
Well, and I was just thinking that the neighborhood connections, you can go up and sort of like go through the neighborhood, but there's no crossing mm-hmm. of the canal. And then Mesa made some bad land use decisions. It was some big super block projects that makes going between Alma School and Extension impossible without going to university or to Main Street.
So the revolution that e-bikes is supposed to promise us is this extended bike ride without any extra effort, right? Mm-hmm. So the extents of our bike rides theoretically are that at some point we're just going to get hot and sweaty and we're going to want to quit. Where the e-bike is like, well, this is kind of like an effortless ride that extends your ride 2, 3, 4 times as much as it used to be. And yet we're now traversing 2, 3, 4 times as much dangerous infrastructure unless we build safe bike infrastructure.
Well, and I think that it's such a lower cost of ownership and maintenance. It really is the future. I think we need to have a e-bike episode where we bring on Louie and maybe some other people. Bring back Louie. And talk a little bit about that. Maybe we can go for a ride on some e-bikes and experience that and talk about it.
Mount the microphones to our handlebars.
Just wind noise.
Well, I saw a couple ladies advanced in their age this past weekend riding on e-bikes, and they just blew by me on the trail. Just blew by me. Yeah, and I can feel better about myself because I saw their little battery pack above their rear wheel, and I'm like, oh, okay, even though I'm pedaling hard there. And they're making this look effortless.
No, I think e-bikes are going to be a huge component of our mobility infrastructure very, very soon. And I'm really happy to see the little chainsaw engined mopeds being less popular.
Oh, the two strokes. They're terrible.
And some of the other things that I was thinking about, fire access, and Lava mentioned the 26-foot wide walking lanes, sort of the main boulevard. And I was wondering, you know, 26 feet, that's pretty much the minimum for fire trucks, is 20 feet plus, right?
Yeah, I mean, typically I've seen fire lanes be as little as 20, but then they want their room for clearances and outriggers, all this kind of stuff. So,
yeah, and I've, you know, I've looked at...
Depending on the height of buildings around them and stuff.
So, I mean, that's exciting. I wonder what the width would be if you didn't have to accommodate the fire trucks there. Or maybe that 26 foot allows you to have a little bit more trees. Because you, I feel like that 20 foot minimum clearance for fire trucks is goes from the center of the earth to outer space too.
I think that's where the 20-foot clear comes from. Like they'll allow like so much of the tree foliage to come in to the 26 feet. You know, so possibly 6 feet on one side and zero on the other, or 3 and 3, or however you want to balance that.
Which is amazing, because a fire truck is what, 8'6" wide or something like that.
Don't get me started. That was a previous episode. That's the whole
point. We have a podcast to get you started. It was also really nice to see hear Lava talk about the experiencing downtown Mesa.
Yes. I think that we owe it to these residents to make sure that they have safe infrastructure to make their way to downtown Mesa.
Right.
David, what do you think?
As long as we don't Gilbert our Mesa.
Don't Gilbert our Mesa, but, you know, like we got question one. Pass through the ballots. Let's just hurry up and spend that bond money as fast as possible so that we can get to the bike infrastructure, because apparently the feds require us to spend all that money on car capacity first, or safety, quote unquote safety. And then eventually we'll get reimbursed and then we can build bike infrastructure.
So we can bankrupt our future selves in East Mesa and save West Mesa for people who want to get around without dying. I love it. We'll Brilliant. Increase the safety and capacity of all the roads out in the East Valley, so everyone dies, but faster. And here in West Mesa, we'll just take quality bike lanes, slower cars, faster throughput, but slower cars, and less death. Because I am really getting tired of seeing dead bodies on my street. I've already seen that in this past year. And just last week, I saw a news article that someone over by your house was killed in his wheelchair trying to cross university.
Yeah. So we can't Gilbert our Mesa, but can we Copenhagenize our Mesa?
Copenhagen-ize? But our winters aren't as cold.
I suppose. What are we going to do? Nobody ever bikes here.
so many people bike. I think that's the big thing is being able to see not only that there are a lot of people who are already riding their bikes, but two, there's a huge demand. And we saw this in the when we started our lockdown with the dang global pandemic we're in. The sheer number of people I saw in those first couple months when we were working from home, riding their bikes and walking in my neighborhood, was stunning. And there's just pent up demand for active transportation.
Okay. So I have an ungracious segue here. You're a developer. You got excited listening to Lava talk about this development coming through and the groundwork that they've made in creating this new development agreement, opening up possibilities. Are you excited, or do you want to dive into this and test the boundaries and see how replicable it can
be? I'm really excited about it. My biggest question I have is, how do you convince the funding partners? You know, they're bringing in money from Silicon Valley, some money that's willing to try this experiment, but assuming they are able to rent their places and it stays rented up, this could be a game changer for banks and other conventional funding sources that would really be able to push this whole idea. You know, I look at it's sort of a chicken and the egg, right? You know, I work in affordable housing, and access to transit is so important. Access to active transportation is so important. But we also live in a metropolitan area that in many ways you need a car to be able to access a lot of those opportunities. And if you can get rid of the car and be in a meaningful place, you can make a much bigger argument. You can make a much bigger dent in someone's finances by being able to avoid those transportation costs and having a location efficient housing option, being able to afford where you are.
Yeah. The concept of a location efficient mortgage.
Well, even though these aren't quote unquote affordable apartments, the mm-hmm. idea of, you know, these will probably, I don't know what the rent will be, but they'll probably be about what the rest of the rent is in Tempe. They're a market rate, so they'll fluctuate with that. But you don't have a car, so you're instantly saving, I don't know, at least $100 a month on transportation costs.
Which you could do in other apartment complexes, but then you wouldn't have the spatial relationship or the added amenities or the added benefits of not having all those car spaces of all your, what would be planned for you and your neighbors to all kind of clutter up the site, right? So you get this quality of life benefit of your location because the whole location has been designed to accommodate your lifestyle preference, which comes with a whole lot of benefits.
Yeah, no, I think that is the other game changer, is that the site is big enough that it can actually feel like its own neighborhood. It's not like, oh, I feel like I'm in my apartment complex and now I'm in the parking lot and now I'm at the street, but it actually feels like its own community, or that's what it looks like on the site plans. I cannot wait to mm-hmm. see walk in here and we can start, like we've done our walking audits when we were in Tucson and walking through these new urbanist places and talking about what could be done better. But it takes someone to make this type of investment and risk. And I really think it's going to pay off for them. It sounds like it already is.
And this won't be the last time we talk about this project. We're coming back.
No, there's so much we can talk about, but I think this is a great thing. You did a great job interviewing Lava. I cannot wait to have 12 different conversations with this group and about this topic or topics tangential to it.
Yeah, and talk to others who want to replicate this magic. So hats off. I have nothing but respect for the groundwork that they've laid, the ability to replicate this concept to bring about more development that is less car dependent and less impactful to the livability and the gentle nature of us squishy humans. You know, it's just amazing. It's a
ways to get around where we don't die.
Yeah. Less squishiness. Less testing of our squishiness. Well, with that, thank you, David, for your closing remarks and your lovely additions to what was already a pretty great conversation with Lava.
Yeah, no, so thank you so much for being able to take that conversation on without me. And I look forward to more conversations about this.
All right. Stay tuned, everyone. Take care.